Welcome in, everybody. It is Inside the Gamecocks, the show portion of our live Gamecock Super Stream. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax. He's JC Sherbert, and we have been terrible hosts, Deputy Smitty, because we left you out there on the front porch for way too long. Ran a little long in the last segment, man. But
no.
Welcome in, Cam Smith, Deputy Smitty, aka as always. Good to have you on, man. Got a new season to talk about and analyze now.
I know. Man, it's here almost. I'm excited.
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm trying not to be outwardly excited. I'm trying not to talk as much as I want to about this roster. It's kind of strange, and I've been diving into the Gamecock roster for a long, long time. It just seems like, Smitty, there's answers that pop up, and then like an overflow of, because it's like, okay, you know, I've been around here years where you're like, all right, you got three good offensive linemen. Who are the other two? You know, or I mean, in 06, man, I remember they had two corners, Fred Bennett and Stoney Woodson. And then Captain Munnerland saved the day because he could start as a true freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And that team won 8 games and almost beat Florida. I mean, they were fine. And you know, that's happened for a while. Then some years, you have a weak unit and it ends up being a weak unit the whole year and right. A liability. And I think in the offseason in college football, that's what you got to do. You got to, like, limit the liabilities as best you can when you're building a roster. And then you look around and you see, well, the linebackers, you know, the one that looks like a player Nick Saban would have recruited, his name's Fred Johnson. And then the other two were actually recruited and signed by Nick Saban.
Right.
You know, you look at the defensive tackles. I wrote something today about Tomiwa Adura-Jaye. He's been basically – going to start since he got here, right? They're that high on him. It kind of surprised me a little bit, but he's kind of the forgotten man, you know? I mean, because there's so many different options. You know, you got a kid like Sequel Patterson, who was special in high school, who in other years, like if he was on the 2020 team, he would at least be the second wide receiver behind Sequel Patterson. I mean, sorry, behind Shai Smith.
Right.
Like, he's that good, but, you know, how are you going to get him on the field? And then you got a bunch of freaks in this class. The freshmen are what's crazy to me. It's like, yeah, I expected 2 or 3, 4 guys. But, man, there's like 8. And so what's your take on the personnel? I mean, just from a talent standpoint. And I know, and look, let's be clear. It's not just about talent. It's just about talent. Everybody that finished high in recruiting would win every year.
Right.
There's a lot that goes into it. But you sort of look around, there's just, I would call it very intriguing options, not just in the front line, but in the, some depth pieces too.
Yeah. That's the way whenever you was talking, that's what I was thinking about. Like, I mean, like you look at the wide receiver room and you go, who's the first 3 that runs out there? The first 4 that runs out there. And it could be completely different than what you're thinking. I mean, you kind of pencil in Nick Harbor, which I get, but then who's the other guys? I mean, this wide receiver room, I feel could be really, really special. I mean, you just go down the line of Donovan Murph and Nitro Tuggle, and then you got guys like that people are kind of forgetting about when it goes like a Jaden Gibson. Then you throw in his Oklahoma tape, and you're like, this guy can make some plays, and he's big, and he's fast. You know, so, I mean, it just goes on and on. I mean, you know, with Jaden, and then you're hearing a lot of good stuff about Mazio, who everybody's kind of, I wouldn't say writing off, but, you know, he had the year that he had last year. And everybody kind of looks at this, you know, receiver room, and you're like, well, he don't have a spot here, or he's down the line, which I'm hearing a lot of good things about him, you know. And that's kind of the way, like, with the defensive tackles, you know, you just keep naming them off with Kelby Collins and the kid from Illinois. I'll butcher his name, but the kid from Illinois, you know, the list goes on.
Troy Pikes, your guy, Troy Pikes. Don't worry about it.
Then you got Troy Pikes that comes. I actually told somebody the other day, I was like, I think he's going to be a sleeper this year. You know, you kind of forgotten about man, but when he come in last year, he made plays. I'm super intrigued by it, and I actually love the fact that we have so much debt there, especially at those two positions.
Yeah, I mean, defensive tackle, man, you know, Brad Lawing used to do this, and he would actually they didn't have a ton of depth, but he would steal snaps. You know, he'd run Aldrick Fordham out there for 5 or 6 plays and rest whoever. And Byron Gerardo, when Gerardo was in his first year, of course, he became a starter and did the same thing with his ends. So, because the offensive line doesn't sub that much. So your D guys, if they can be fresh in the fourth quarter, that's a huge advantage, in my opinion. You look at the Kendall Briles system, and you've had some clips up, and I don't know which game you went back and watched, but a lot of people have. I went back. My Kendall Briles Arkansas game I go to is A&M out there in Jerry World in 21. I think that game just kind of because of how it unfolded in the first half, especially, may give us a true picture because KJ, they went vertical a lot with Treylon Burks, and they ran the ball a lot. KJ Jefferson actually looked good in that game passing mm-hmm. it. What's your take on what we're going to see out of this thing? Because I don't know that folks out there, I don't know that it's hit them that you have Lenora Sellers at quarterback in this system.
Right.
And it's fast and furious. So just talk to us a little bit.
Yeah. About that. I mean, obviously I'm high on Briles. I've always liked him. And the fact that when we hired him, I mean, I thought it was a home run. I don't think, you know, last year I kind of felt we were really, I would say, hard-headed. You know, we're kind of like, Shula's going to do what he's going to do type thing. And you see the offense kind of, once Mike took over, I mean, just a little short time he had, it got better instantly, kind of spread it out a little bit and let him play a little bit more free and loose. I feel like that's what you're going to see this year with Briles. He's not going to try to force something that's just simply just not there. And I felt like at times last year, that's what we did. And I get you have to run the ball. I mean, I love throwing it, but you got to establish the run. So, but with Briles, I mean, I think he's going to play off of what the defense gives him. He's not going to make it too hard. He's going to let the guys run, you know, play free, run fast, not think as much. And when you don't think as much, you play fast. And I feel like last year a few times, especially Sellers, I would say that he just wasn't playing fast. I mean, you kind of saw it, you know, too much thinking going on. I feel like this year, a lot of that gets wiped away. A lot of it does. And easy throw, easy reads, and then I mean, and just run. And, you know, once you start spreading them out and whatnot, and then you got Fuller and Clark and them boys just hitting it up in there. And, oh, by the way, like you said, you got Sellers still to deal with. I mean, so there's no reason why this offense just ain't, I mean, up and down the field. I mean, I don't want to put too much on it. Like, I'm sitting there thinking we should just be up and down the field on Georgia or something. But, I mean, especially these first 2 weeks, I get us, you know, more so of a tune-up to get ready for Mississippi State. And I don't know how much you're going to show against those two teams. I would like to kind of open it up a little bit, you know, a 38-0 halftime type thing. You know, let's not go into halftime at 17-3 to week one or something like that. Let's actually get out there and jump on them, get the fans excited, get the team excited. You know, it's fun to score points. And going to Mississippi State, man, just 100% confidence with everything. Fans are just going to be wild about it. So, dude, I'm excited. I don't know if you can tell.
Yeah, I mean, no, I share your enthusiasm, definitely. Look, you know, you coached football, you know, about install and all that good stuff and learning a playbook and it, you know, we talked to Perry Orth earlier about terminology and stuff. And for young players, high school or college, I think this, Vinny, I love NFL football. Don't get me wrong. And when those offenses, and I mentioned this before, like last year, I watched the Bears and the Bengals. I think it's Zach. What's the Bengals coach?
Taylor.
Zach Taylor versus Ben Johnson. Two mm-hmm. pretty good. All right. So when they can't stop each other, it's wildly awesome. And in that game, they had some injuries. They weren't stopped. It's a total shootout. I was like, wow, this is what it's like. In that league, though, there's just rules and you don't, you know, you, chances are you're not going to fool somebody over and over, whatever.
Right.
I think college football is much more similar to high school, where you have players in, players out every year, that you don't have the time to teach during the week. You're limited still by the NCAA with practice rules. I'm not saying pro play. It's not the plays in the concepts. I think it's sometimes how these NFL guys try to teach it. And kind of what was told to me was, hey, man, there's a big difference between trying to learn an 8-word play call, 9-word play call, 7-word play call, and one. And for a young player, you haven't coached and all that. Don't you think that would allow them to play a little freer because it's just much easier to know what you're doing? And that's just not Lenore's; it's everybody else too.
Yeah, no, 100%. Well, you know, for instance, you know, whenever I was at Spartanburg, you know, all those coaches come from Burns basically, and so when they come from Burns, you know, you had Bentley system that came with him. And so, you know, of course, we had Tavian there at the time. We took him to actually, I took him, me and a few other coaches, took him to Auburn for, it was actually South Carolina at Auburn in 14 for a recruiting visit. And so we ended up talking to, that's when Bentley was at Auburn. And we ended up talking to them after the game. And so we were just kind of like, well, what's the difference? Like, what's the offense like here? You know, he's like, it's the same basically that I ran at Burns.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Gus Miles, right? Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, you know, we go Rio 94. You know, that's the formation. That's the play. Bam. He said, and we're on the ball going. I mean, Auburn went to a national championship, but was a, you know, a few plays away from winning a national championship running something that simple. That's all it is. And your guys just get lined up and they play fast and there's no thinking. I mean, I don't know what Shula's play calls were, but I would imagine they were pretty long or mm-hmm. longer than your normal college play, I guess. I'm not all about that. It's just mm-hmm. let's call a play, you know, something simple and boom. And you could do that. I mean, like I said, Auburn did it. And, there's a lot of team, you know, coaches out here that have done it. I would be curious to hear what Browse is. I'm sure it's very short and simple, and everybody knows what they're doing.
Yeah, and so everybody kind of gets on the same page. Lane Kiffin even talked about it. Like when Browse went to Florida Atlantic, they decided they were going to go really, really fast, and Lane actually shrunk the terminology, and it stuck with him. And he said that's why Trinidad Chambliss was able to step in and execute like he was, because he mm-hmm. came in over the summer. And that may be too, on that note, and then we get the offensive line in a second. That may be why Darius, maybe they're not as, you know, I mean, Darius is a freak, but Darius Gray coming in and picking up everything, that may be another reason why he's, you know, maybe they're like, oh, well, if he's physically ready to go, he can play, because it mm-hmm. is easier to learn. And on that note, with your offensive line, I mean, I would think Deputy Smitty. So we have Matt Smith. We call him Smitty. And so if I say deputy, that's awkward. You just
say Smitty. Yeah, everybody calls me Smitty.
I know, but we got another Smitty. So I'm like, I'm right. Gonna stop myself. Foolish. But so my hello, deputy.
Yeah,
world. I'll just call you Kirby Smart. How about that?
I know. You know, I was funny. I was gonna kind of put like a little Kirby Smart picture, kind of like sitting in the stands. Yeah, man. Like, you know, that's kind of big enough you can see it.
There you go.
Right. Yeah.
But last year, man. In addition to sometimes guys quit. Sometimes guys played hard. Sometimes they missed blocks. So the offensive line was a mess most mm-hmm. of the year. A lot of it was mental, I think. You know, 7 false starts on the center. It's unprecedented. Yeah. And they look confused. I've never seen a situation where players come into a press conference and talk about being confused.
Right.
During the week before the game. Boaz Stanley, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, just me kind of outside looking in, I kind of felt like they were just kind of grasping at the straws here, like, because they see what's out there and they see that they're getting beat up and they see what, you know, it's not good on Saturday. But they're probably thinking, too, you know, well, we're having to do this for what, you know, whatever the case was between those, you know, whatever those two last coaches were coaching. I don't know what was going on there. But again, got better with Mike and got better with Sean. And then going back to, you know, like you said, too, I don't think they were as bad as what they were, even though it appeared real bad. I mean, but you also had a banged up Josiah Thompson that we didn't know was hurt either.
Yeah.
So that definitely didn't help. You know, everybody kept talking about, you know, Josiah's taking a step back. And I'm like, well, there's a lot of things that could go into that. I wouldn't think an injury, which I knew injury could go into it, but I mean, he's suiting up out there. He looks fine, but obviously he was going through a lot of stuff, you know, so.
Yeah. He went, you know, he got better when Elliott took over. That was Oklahoma game. That was a bad day for everybody, but it wasn't for him. He like actually looked a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Played pretty solid for the rest of the year. You know, had some. It wasn't himself, but yeah, I kind of got tipped off that, you know, maybe there were some lingering things there with his. And then, you know, I didn't know he had to have surgery until I knew, but. That was what it was, and he'll come back next year. These guys, though, what they do preach. Jason Smith and Randy Clements and how they've recruited. They were very intentional with getting guys that are physical and tough, like nasty offensive linemen. I think offensive line's the most difficult position, probably always has been the most difficult position. But nowadays, if you think about it, Smitty, you don't get talked about at all unless Cole Kublitz calling your game mm-hmm. or Matt Stinchcomb. You don't get talked about it all. I mean, everybody. If a running back goes through a big hole and scores a touchdown, it's all about the running back. If the quarterback has good protection, it's all about the quarterback and the receiver. You know, But if you screw up, everybody hates you. Right. So you get no credit. And everybody loves credit these days, mm-hmm. right? You get no credit. It's an unnatural positioning of your body, squatting and bending over like that. You yeah. get hit every single play. You get beat up. You just really have to love the game. And you have to be a little bit crazy and nasty.
Yep.
A lot of these guys, Carter Miller, Hank Purvis, Dane Arnett, Kojo Poku, one of the things they targeted, and you got to figure this out. You know, it's easier to figure out portal guys than high school guys beforehand. And it's not an exact science, but they're pretty nasty. And you hear the players talk, and folks from inside the program, they talk like, well, at a minimum, these guys are physical and love contact. I think that's refreshing because if everything breaks down, just hit somebody, right?
Yep. Yeah, no, I think our offensive line, yeah, we'll take a massive jump. I'm actually excited about these guys and to see them. Like I said, you got a lot of snaps up there too, which, you know, I can't emphasize how much that means. You know, people's like, I've told somebody that before, and they're like, well, is it good snaps? I'm like, oh, well, they've had, you know, they were pretty good where they were at, you know? And I was like, it's a ton of snaps that you put together up there. Like I said, just nasty. Like I was watching the Poku kid. I mean, the way he finishes on some of his blocks and stuff at East Carolina, and he was just mauling them. I mean, you got to be nasty. You got to be physical. And if you're not, you're not going to last, especially in this league. I mean, you'll get ate up quick.
And it's like too, you know, like Carter Miller is like his third or fourth school or whatever. You know, 6'1" fireplug dude, high school ball in Texas. It's his dream to play. I mean, that guy is just never given up. I mean, and to play inside like that long in college football, I mean, and you know, you never hear the word money about any of these guys. Like they came mm-hmm. to South Carolina because they made a good NIL deal. Even Jacarius Peak did not. Yeah, he talked about like development and all that when he came. I mean, obviously, there's money being spent there. But I mean, I think that gives you a chance. Guys mm-hmm. like that just love it, and that they don't want to give it. It's just their dream, and they just want to go out there and be physical. I think that even if they're not the most talented guys, and I'm not saying they're not. I think there's very talented guys. On the offensive line, I think that gives you more of a chance than, you know, maybe just a lot of big dudes. And I'm not saying this was the case about the guys last year. I'm just saying there's some offensive lines out there in college football. You see a bunch of 5-star guys that they're just playing patty cake, waiting for their next NIL check. I would probably err on the side of this physical athleticism.
Right. And it kind of reminds me of, Like in basketball, you might not be the most talented player, but you're having a guard, you know, a superstar. And when you're that defensive player that just stays on him and nags him and nags him and nags him all game, it frustrates him. And sometimes you see him just kind of back down like, oh, okay, I'm done, you know, and they won't be as aggressive trying to score. I'm not saying our guys are not as good as who they're going to face, but when you got that nastiness and you constantly just finishing blocks, you're going to start drawing flags because, you know, the defensive line is going to get up and push you, you know, after the play or whatnot. They're going to get in their head. And once the player gets in his head, he's most of that time, you know, he's cooked. He's done for that week. So I feel like these guys are going to be nasty. I really do. I'm excited about this group. Really excited about this group. The trenches, the way that we have rebuilt it, I'm super excited. I mean, when you got on the other side, like with Caleb Herring, I can't wait to see him. I think he's going to fly off that edge. And you know, you pair him up with Dylan on the other side, and good luck. Because you got defensive tackles that can just push the pocket, you know?
So yeah, good luck. That's important. Yeah, and Caleb, too. I mean, he was talking the other day. He's like, I walk around town and people ask me if I play wide receiver. He looks thin. And you know, with guys like that, sometimes it's like, I hope he can play the run. Because I think that's one thing Kyle Kinnard did really well that nobody talked about is playing the run, setting the edge like that. But they say in spring, that was probably what he did best. He's really impressive against the run. And yeah. I like Caleb. He's a leader. You know, he's an older guy. You hear him talk. That's good. So let me ask you this, Tempo, and one more offensive line and kind of a coach question because I like to pick your brain. I'm assuming it's Spartan High with the burn system. Y'all were tempo, right?
You like oh, yeah.
Not going. Mm-hmm. If it's anything to do with I know Bobby Bitley pretty well. And I know they're probably going fast. G.A. Mangus was on with us, and he was talking about how offensive linemen love tempo because it kind of forces a defense to stay in base. Mm-hmm. I felt like last year, sometimes South Carolina's pre-snap substitutions and slowness – allowed the opposing D coordinator to change things up and maybe throw some flies in the ointment. I'm not saying you could never do that if a team's running tempo against you, but doesn't it make it harder for a D coordinator to really do a whole lot pre-snap? And then wouldn't it make it easier for the offensive line to kind of keep up with their assignments if they know kind of, all right, they're going to have to stay in base, let's roll?
Yeah, yeah, 100% on both. I mean, when you're moving and when you're tempo, you know, you're going to see the base defense for the most part, you know, because you get lined up, you're playing fast, and you're going. You know, the defense coordinator, he's trying to signal in or whatnot. And, I mean, when you're going so fast, the call has got to come in. And then you got to communicate across the field. So you can't be sitting there trying to get a call in, and then your safety, your corner is trying to communicate, you know, to the other safety, to the other corner. By that time, we've already snapped the ball, and we're out of there. Or Nick Harbor's by you. I mean, so and plus, you know, same way, you know, defensive line, you know, they're just playing their normal base, and the offensive line knows that. So they can fire off the ball. They can – you know, if they have to reach somebody, they can reach them a lot quicker, a lot faster. And then that's when them blocks hit, and then, boom, you're out the gate.
You mentioned Nick Harbor. This is Deputy Smitty, by the way, our third conversation with him here on Inside the Gamecocks. So hopefully we'll have a few more. We're going to get him for, like, one more question here. Okay, so Nick Harbor, you mentioned him. And you did it. By the way, go check out Smitty's breakdown. I think he did have a breakdown on Jaden Gibson on YouTube. Mm-hmm. All right, so he's up to 6'6", 243. That's Kalimba Edwards size, man.
Yeah.
Nick in space. Now, this offense is going to spread the field 53.5 yards, right? Like Tennessee, a lot like Tennessee and does and Ole Miss does. So sometimes getting Nick the ball in space, given what we saw, that one play with A&M and just his speed, and I think he's getting to where he can turn and get upfield. Mm-hmm. What do you see happening there, and if they can get him touches in space more often?
Yeah, well, that's why I'm excited. I mean, because I think that's what you're going to get. You know, everybody was kind of looking for that home run from Nick because we all hear about the speed and stuff, and you saw it versus Virginia Tech on the post route, and then all of a sudden, you know, it took a couple of games, but then you saw it versus A&M when he took the curl, he made the safety miss, and he's out of there. I feel like you're going to a ton of those opportunities this year with him. And I mean, what he did versus A&M, I mean, I expect him to keep doing. I'm not saying he's going to break out every time that he does it, but he's going to scare a defense every single time doing that. I mean, and I feel like too, on knowing Nick, he's going to open up so much for these other guys as well. Yeah. Everybody's worried about his speed or whatnot. And then all of a sudden you throw a swing route to Sellers, and you saw, I mean, I know it's coastal, but you saw what he did, you know, yeah. And he's got a ton of speed. I mean, I don't know, dude. I really am. I'm super excited about this. I mean, the length that we have at receiver, the speed that we have at receiver, like you just go down the list and you go, who do I not feel comfortable with in the game? And you might could get to eight receivers. You're like, I still feel good. You know, like dude, that deep.
I love Jordan Gidron. I mean, I think Stone Fury's at first going to be a really good. I mean, if you watched him in high school, that dude, Charlie Mullaly.
Yep.
Cue the Irish accent.
Charlie. You know, I've tried to find a lot of stuff. It's hard to find, but I've tried to find stuff. You can't find it.
I found one thing where he's working out and he looked fast and all that, but mm-hmm. he's a fast, good athletic kid. Yeah. Sequel Patterson, man, I must have missed it or forgotten what I saw on his film because I went back because people were talking about him and watched his senior film at Indian Land. That guy just does some things that, as good as a lot of these guys on campus are, that you just don't see that often mm-hmm. with the suddenness and the way he can make people miss and accelerate. I mean, plus he's a football player. He plays both sides. He played both sides. He played on special teams. I mean, he may be young, but that guy can be really special.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to say shocked, but I was kind of a bit caught off guard when I heard that he's making some noise, and don't be surprised if he's in there early on. I'm like, you know, he's a younger kid, obviously. And I'm like, and this room is pretty deep. And if we're talking about a true freshman coming in and can get in this rotation, you know, early, he must be really special. I mean, you know, I'm like, whoa, you know, stuff I love to hear.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess I didn't really start thinking about it. And then I was like, well, let me just go back and watch this again. And then I was mm-hmm. like, oh. I must have missed this.
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, I see what people are talking about. Not, I had a guy that works for the Falcons now. He saw Sequel play like 8 times against his kid's team and some other teams in the Charlotte area. And he loves Carolina's receivers, like loves Murph, loves Pup, Bazio. He's like, they're loaded, whatever. And we were talking about that, and he's like, well, there's one guy that's going to play. I will tell you who. He said, Sequel Patterson. I was like, oh, come. Yeah, I was like, wow, now you got all these guys, and he's young, and he's even supposed to still be in high school.
Yep.
And then I got it, and then somebody turned on his basketball tape. And this is – so he basically replaces Brian Rowe, who was really good at leaping up and getting the ball. And my man just takes one dribble and just dunks all over. I was like, wow. You know. He was ranked number 18 overall in the country, like 5-star guy before he reclassified. So I understand what they were thinking now.
That might be why a couple people kind of forget about him. So, you know what I mean? Cause like I say, he's supposed to be in high school. We kind of reclassified and he wasn't that, I guess maybe splash signing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He committed it last summer. Like he said, he's going to reclassify. And who was it? I guess Georgia was kind of in on him, but I mean, he like committed to Carolina over Kentucky or Virginia or somebody, you know, because everybody knew he was going to Carolina because of what happened with Murph and Gidron. And at the time, Carolina had lost like J.B. Shabazz, that tackle. That was right when you kind of figured out Smoke Matthews was going to Texas. And Tamarian Watkins surprisingly went to A&M, although Carolina got Tristan Lewis right after that, and he's going to be pretty good. But, you know, so it kind of got lost a little bit. And then he didn't enroll in December, so you kind of forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, Sequel Patterson. So I don't know, man. I don't know. Any final thoughts you have here? A player or two that you like going in, and then we'll wrap it up.
I mean, dude, honestly, I know I'm probably sounding like a homer, but I feel like there is a handful. There's several like that. I'm just excited to see. I mean, of course, you know, the whole offensive line, some of these defensive tackles, you know, we keep talking about it, but I really think Matthew Fuller is going to have a good year. I really do. You know, I know that that Coach Drayton was talking about, you know, you got to be able to pass block and stuff like that. And obviously, you know, Fuller hasn't had a ton of opportunities, so hopefully that's going good in practice. But I really think Fuller, but I mean, that again, that running back room, though, I think should be really good as well. I mean, with Clark and, you know, Isaiah, man, I didn't realize how big he was. Well, when I saw the video the other day, and I was like, you know, he's wearing number 4, like, you know, how Henry used to, I'm like, he's got Derrick Henry. I'm not saying he's Derrick Henry, but I'm like, he looks big like that. You know what I mean? And then, but yeah, I mean, and I think a lot of guys that a lot of people forget about on defense, who I'm a big fan of, I thought he played really well last year when he had his opportunity, and that's Gerald Kilgore. I really like Gerald.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people's kind of forgetting about him right now. And don't be surprised if Gerald's out there making plays this year. I'm a big fan of him.
Yeah, he's locked in on – he and Quasheed Scott. And actually, on my projected depth chart, I have Kilgore. I think right now he's probably starting at nickel. But that's going to be more – like, obviously, when Jalen was there, they didn't rotate. I mean,
right.
Jalen on the field, I think they'll rotate up quite a bit. And Quasheed could obviously overtake him. But his – you know, he just has that ability sometimes, Gerald does, to be in the right place and pick the ball off, and he's fast and he's good. I mean, it's not like he's just one of those guys that's, well, you got to put him in, you know, the right place and live with the liability. I think he can be quite good.
Yeah. Just go back and look at his, that Missouri interception. You know, we were on the brinks of, oh, this game's about to get out of hand if we don't make a play right here, you know? And, the play that he made showed his athleticism and how he can go up, you know, He jumps and the ball's back behind him and he reaches back and snags it, and you know, just a great play. So I'm really high on him. I think he's gonna have a really good year. And he's kind of like the forgotten guy, so to speak. So
yeah, outstanding. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, Deputy, God, there I go again, Smitty. We appreciate you, man, and keep up the good work. It's a Smitty Sports Network on YouTube, right? On YouTube. Deputy Smitty, all over social media. You'll see him. He's we retweet him all the time on our social media account stuff. We'll have you back in real soon, man.
Yep.
And looking forward to maybe seeing you at a game this year.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Deputy Smitty, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. I like it.
Always great to talk ball with that guy, fellow Spartanburg native. And he just knows sport. I just like talking to him because he knows he's coached. And he's been on the field and stuff.
Yeah, he has that coaching experience, which really comes through. And because you could tell it when he's watching the tapes and the cuts and all of that. It was like, yeah, man, this guy knows ball, right? It's like, this isn't just somebody who's just picking up on, you know, tiny little things here and there. It's like he actually has he's coming from a place of experience.
Exactly. And is a fantastic, fantastic person, too. All right, let's get a break in. Catch up for
speaking of bourbon.
McKellar Enterprises chat box. Yeah, a lot of bourbon talk with Patrick Davis. Thanks to Patrick for coming over. Please consider going to one of Patrick's events. The wife and I are going to get to one at some point. We were going to go to the one at Cabo, but it just didn't work out schedule-wise and all that last year. But that's the one I'll probably get to. Maybe you and the missus could get away. How about going all of the four of us to Cabo?
Oh, yeah. My wife is dying to – she keeps pushing Mexico on me, so – that's right.
We could wear get us matching Panama jack hats.
We could.
Sit at the cabana all day while the girls sunbathe.
That's right.
That'd be fun.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, we go deep sea fishing, man. In the Pacific, in the mighty Pacific.
That's right, yeah. And I've never been to the Pacific Ocean. Never even seen it. Never laid eyes on it.
Seen it a couple times. It wasn't what I expected. When I was a kid, I always thought, you know, because you saw the big waves and the surf.
Always
rooms.
Big waves and blue, always blue.
Yeah, L.A., Half Moon Bay in California just didn't just kind of looked like Myrtle Beach. maybe I'm stupid. No. That's right. Now, there are mountains. It does look different than Myrtle Beach, but anyway. GamecockTraditions.com. They add stuff every single day. Also, Gamecock Traditions, brick and mortar stores, Village at Sand Hill, also out in Lexington. Follow them on social media. It's not like following a normal clothing company on social media. They're interactive. They got really good stuff. Proud sponsors of Inside the Gamecocks, the show and the morning show. Don't forget tomorrow, John Strickland will be in. Matt Anderson joins us for the third hour. We did have a coffee this morning. If you're looking for it on podcast, it will not upload to our program. I'm not going to mention the program, but our program that we used this morning. I couldn't get it to save.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's a little heads up for you, Philip, later this afternoon.
Yeah, good. I'll be dealing with that.
Super duper. Nah, it may be my file. I don't know. But, but it'll be up later. It's about physicality, what we've been talking about. But we'll be back after this.
Welcome back, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show rolling on here. Final segment of the show here on a thirsty Thursday. Glad to have Deputy Smitty in. Appreciate him dropping by. Working with we will have soon. SEC Mike is going to join us, JC. Just trying to hammer out a day. Been going back and forth with Mike
Bratton.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we don't have him.
You know, I've seen Cousin Shane do some guest spots here.
Okay, hold on now.
Maybe even in our market. Maybe not in our market, but we got to get Cousin Shane.
Yeah, we definitely need to work it out to where we can have Cousin Shane on. Everybody would love
those guys are interesting. They're high on Carolina this year. They're also super high on Tennessee.
Yeah.
I think they picked Tennessee fourth in the league. That's very interesting. But I keep going back, and I wrote on the Big Spur yesterday about like the three games that, you know, College Game Day has been here once since 2014. That was 2024. So kind of a fun little exercise. So where could we, you know, Where could we see game day come to Columbia again? Right. So the first game, I think the first opportunity is probably that Tennessee game.
Yeah.
And the reason is I don't think it's going to surprise anybody if Texas goes to Knoxville and loses.
It's not as improbable as one would think, you know, like just on the surface, right? Yeah, it's not going to be
that program's still kind of getting used to like not, you know, it's not Kansas. You're not in Kansas anymore. And if you really think about this, you know, Texas is look different players, different coaches, whatever. I mean, you know, everything's different. But sometimes programs, no matter who the coach is, they just tend. It's a funny thing in college football, and I started like, you know, putting it through my head, I was like, well, who did Texas struggle with the most while they're in the Big 12? Kansas State for some reason. Well, Kansas State packs it out and has a rabid fan base, and their stadium is hard to play in.
True.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, you know. And then I was like, well, sir, there are good teams in the Big 12, right? Well, guess what? After Nebraska left, you know, and Nebraska was kind of declining and all that, you know, I guess A&M was hard, and they certainly lost sometimes at A&M. Other than that, those venues aren't much. And then they didn't have to play Oklahoma in Norman ever.
Mm.
It's always neutral site. So they come into this league, and dude, they'd taken L at Florida last year. They had to have a valiant comeback to beat Mississippi State. They were beat dead in the water in Starkville. And then the mighty Kentucky defense that I was like disgusted that South Carolina only put up 21 points against, held them to like 13 in regulation. They escaped Lexington by 3.
Yeah.
All right. So I just don't know, man. I mean, you know, Knoxville has 107. Now look, Texas won at Alabama at night 2 years ago before they got the SEC. So I'm not saying that they can't. I'm just saying it's, you know, it's not going to surprise anybody if Tennessee wins that game. Tennessee's road games are at Arkansas and at Georgia Tech before they come to Carolina. They have Alabama at home. They have Auburn at home. They have Texas at home. I see a path for them to be undefeated when they come to Columbia. But it's kind of like a Texas A&M 2024 undefeated, in my opinion.
Yeah, right.
And if they are, and if Carolina can take care of business, kind of looking at the other matchups that weekend, I see Carolina getting game. I see Columbia getting game day.
I see that as definitely the first opportunity.
For sure. And I wrote down, I was like, okay, so here's, I got a picture of Pat McAfee holding the Gamecock. So that weekend, there's Texas A&M at Bama.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, in theory, Carolina and Tennessee both would have had to have beaten Bama. Ole Miss at Texas, that could throw it off. Virginia Tech and Clemson play that weekend. Like, if Virginia Tech's surprisingly good and Clemson's undefeated. Indiana at Michigan, Southern Cal at Illinois. Indiana, Michigan, I don't know. You know, so that could be the first one. The second one's A&M. There's not a lot of competition. Georgia Ole Miss would be competition. There's not a lot of non-SEC competition. But Georgia Ole Miss, Alabama, LSU, Oklahoma, Florida that weekend in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
And then the please, Lord, let this happen option is that Georgia game.
Yeah.
And there, it's really light that weekend. So Virginia Tech, Miami, the ACC, Ohio State, Nebraska, the Big Ten. Texas A&M and Oklahoma play, and then LSU at Tennessee. Hey, Carolina beats the Vols. You know, they may end up getting the game. That may be the game day bowl because Lane Kiffin going back to Tennessee. Although Lane Kiffin going back to Tennessee is not going to be nearly as dramatic as going back to Ole Miss.
No, yeah, they're going to they're gonna expend all that Lane Kiffin on the Ole Miss game.
If college game day is at the Georgia-Carolina game this year that late in the season, that means good things have happened.
Yeah, that means that very likely the winner of this game is going to be in Atlanta 2 weeks from this date.
Yeah. Cockweed says, I ain't choosing Texas.
I ain't choosing
that Texas. Song. Choosing Texas ain't it beer. Anyway, our Enterprises chat box. I knew Craiger would love Noah Clark because Craig's Mr. Size. He loves size.
Right.
And Bryce, by the way, Bryce, good morning to you, sir. Bryce in the chat box. I know it was a little while ago, but we have guests. We got to all listen to the guests. So give me a 6'5", 345-pound pounder at D-tackle. I don't care if he's a freshman. He's going to play, Noah Clark is. But if you hear everybody, like the media does a pretty good job of asking guys questions about other players, you know, because sometimes you'll ask, you know, I wish with the coaches, I think maybe it's because sometimes you just get a canned answer if you ask specifically about a guy.
Yeah.
Well, he's working hard and competing. Right. Next. But the players kind of, they're not going to throw anybody under the bus, but they'll kind of, if you ask them, like, name a couple of players that are looking good, they all say Noah Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them.
Yeah. 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 I think Tomiwa was talking about him yesterday when.
Oh, he went on and on.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Handles his business.
I mean, yeah, that's like, something else. So. And that's the thing that surprised me. I mean, I didn't really hammer this home all summer or all off season. And it's starting to come into focus is this class. Like, yes, we expected Xavier and Currents to play. I kind of looked at it. I was like, well, Currents will play, could start because there's an opening at safety. Yeah. Although he may not, you know, maybe not right away.
And there's going to be opportunities for Walker.
Walker's good. Yeah, they need some depth at edge. And Darius Gray could work his way in somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought. Those three guys. Noah Clark, if he reshapes, could get some snaps because he's got a different body type. I didn't expect the first shock was Tristan Lewis looks great in the scrimmage.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you start hearing about the freshman DBs, right? Yeah, and you're like, oh,
and I'm like, yeah. I mean, and look, some of the like Kazi Barnes getting on the field. Now it's not. I mean, a lot of freshman DBs have played, but you know. So that was kind of my thing. I was like, you know, Aiden Harris could get in the rotation a little bit. I mean, you look at it, I didn't expect, you know, Landon Duckworth, obviously, he's the quarterback. So, you know, he's got to be behind other guys. You know, Sequel was coming in late coming in the normal time. But yeah, the first shocker was Tristan Lewis. It's like, oh, okay. And then you hear all this about Noah Clark, like on and on and on. And then Julian Walker's not only a guy that can contribute, he could possibly start. and then also in this class, you know, the guys that you hear the buzz about Sequel Patterson. And then, oh, boom, by the way, Darius Gray may be unlike anything you've ever seen. And this is not hype. Okay, I'll tell you why. Coaches will hype a recruiting class.
Oh, yeah.
Until they sign. And then they don't want to. It's like drill sergeant. You remember when Forrest Gump joined the Army? And the next thing is the drill sergeant yelling in his face.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, dude. So it's like, they don't. I mean, they have to be really, really good for them to be like, other than, oh, yeah, they're just working hard. Shane Beamer, if you look at his face when he's talking about Darius Gray, Shane's kind of had this serious look, and I'm here for it because I think he knows he could possibly have a pretty good team, but there's also a lot of work to do.
Yeah, right.
You know, mm-hmm. And I think that they're gradually, collectively all getting madder and madder about what happened last year.
Good.
Take it out on somebody.
Right,
but he kind of started smiling and was jovial when that happened, and so that's just icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect seven or eight guys, and then the guys that probably aren't going to play a whole lot. There's some freakiness there too. Landon Duckworth is kind of freaky, right?
Right.
Zion Giles is going to be really good. He's kind of this big athletic guy that's going to be good. Andrew Harris, I think, is kind of twitchy, right? Keenan Britt's probably going to play special teams because he was the special teams newcomer in the spring. You know, KJ Johnson's a sprinter. He's got really good speed and length. Caden Ramsey, how many times have we talked about him?
Oh, right. Yeah. Probably not enough because I think he's got the ability to, make some play. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and then there's Nasty Neff Jiwa.
Yeah, right. And then the biggest question mark on the team, right?
Yeah, but
rugby giant.
I think the lights come on the lights come on for the coaches going, you know, I'm sure they've always thought this, but, you know, about maybe putting him on some special teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Beamer also had a little misdirection the other day when he talked about putting him on punt block. Yeah, maybe you do put him on punt block. I mean, you think about a 6'7" guy that's athletic and can run. Maybe I'm sorry. I'm going to take that back. I don't know that it was misdirection. Because if you think about it, now you got to worry about him tackling the punter. The punter lets go of the ball. I don't know what the rugby rules are. But if you think about this guy, when you watch his rugby stuff, he's running around like a soccer player. I mean, like he's that big.
And just his agility is nuts.
It's
right?
Insane.
Yeah. I know.
And you know he can jump and you know he can leap. So if you just teach him to fire off the edge, good luck blocking him. Because there aren't many 6'7", 290 pounders firing off the edge.
Right.
And then he lays out at 6'7" and gets there.
Yeah, that's
but anyway.
Punt block. It was like, man, just get a fingertip on it, and you can cream that.
I would work him like I would almost. And I know they won't do this because this is why I'm not a coach. I would almost like say, all right, Neff, you're going to take half the practice. And you're going to work with the offensive line, right? Because you know you're probably about fifth team right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, fifth team tackle.
Because we got to teach you the game. But what we're going to do, we're going to send you over to the field with these student assistants. And all day, you know, or not all day, but for like two periods, we're just going to teach you to go block punts.
That's right. Just block punts.
Lay out there. You put some pads down there, you know, so he doesn't skin up his belly. You just go and lay out. Imagine him and Maurice Brown both coming at you for
good God. Put a neck roll on that guy.
Put a neck roll on Neff Jiwa.
Neck roll on Neff Jiwa. They'd be wetting themselves on the other side of that.
Man, we're almost out of time.
I know.
Cockweed says he has faith in the backup quarterback, Cutter Woods. Yeah, it's a much better situation than last year. And that's nothing against Luke Doty. But Cutter was the best backup.
Right.
Putting him in behind that line is Bob, that offense is pretty scary. Sure. Luke says it seems like every team says they have a good roster now and great coaches. It's August.
That's right. 2 weeks into August, you better hope that's what you're hearing coming out of the building.
Yeah. But I don't. I mean, I think they've had a good roster. This one could be a little bit better than good.
Yeah.
Just because of the potential there. And you know, it's simple stuff like height, weight, speed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, there's years where you go in, linebackers should be pretty good. Like when, you know, you had Sky Moore and TJ Brunson. You know, those two linebackers. And I think Sherrod Green, healthy, was in that group too, I think 17 or so. You know, that year they should be good at linebacker. None of those guys were 6'4", 240, and ran 4.5 like Fred Johnson. And none of those guys were like the 6'3", 230-pound German assassin like Justin Uncle Runquo.
Who does have a pretty thick accent, too. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
His native tongue.
Sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He does. It was very much.
I am just very happy. I'm happy to be here. You know, good. And then they didn't have a guy like Sean Murphy who – was recruited by Alabama and was one of the top linebacker. You know, I mean, they didn't have those types of guys. They didn't have anybody that was 6'5", 300.
No.
None of the Spurrier teams had defensive tackles like this.
Mm-hmm.
They had Travion, Lottie Ashboy, Kelsey Quarles, Byron Gerardo. I think Travion was the only one drafted that whole time. So, I don't know, man. Harrison says the upstate school's full of nobodies, according to Dabo. Listen. I'm going to just tell you this right now. I'm going to tell you this right now, and I may be crazy. Do not be surprised if they go beat LSU at LSU.
Right.
And you're going to need, you Gamecock fans, you are going to need to prepare to hear it for a week.
Mentally prepare yourself.
Mentally prepare yourself. Right. Because LSU, there's a lot of new down there. They portaled it up. They are going, and they spent a lot of money, and they're going to be extremely overconfident. They'll be about a 12.5-point favorite, probably.
Oh, wow. You think it'd be that big? You're probably right.
Clemson is coming off 7-6. They lost Cade Klubnik. I mean, you lost one of the receivers. Antonio Williams been walking through that door. They have questions on the O-line. They had to rebuild their secondary. They lost all those draft picks. But I'm telling you, man.
I know.
I've seen this movie before, especially with somebody like a kind of a semi-wounded animal like Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Against a team that, even behind the scenes, you hear the LSU folks, even Lane Kiffin's alluded to it, hey, man, we may not be national championship good this year.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
And the hype is going to be through the roof. And Chad Morris has been out of the game studying ball plays. Mm-hmm. And Clemson has enough speed at running back and receiver and enough playmakers to where they can go in there, dial some things up to get, you know, quick touchdowns or whatever, and really make, I don't know, man. Just, I mean, yeah. Mark it down. Do not be surprised if that happens. Do I hope it happens? Probably not.
No.
None of us do.
None of us want that to happen. But
I just got this gut feeling about that game. And you know what I feel about this game? And don't get mad at me. I'm not trying to stir the pot, folks. I can't help it. My gut feelings about games. Remember, I talked all year before Vanderbilt, Virginia Tech. In,
yeah, right.
Yeah, remember, Virginia Tech, this is our year. And I was like, beware the kill zone.
Beware the kill zone.
Now, there's no kill zone went to Clemson. It's Chad Morris. But I'm just telling you.
The architect of the Clemson offense. You know, it's back home.
Like, hey, you know, don't get full. I mean, this is kind of feels weird. And then there's also justice in the world. You know, LSU, yeah. Lane Kiffin leaving, gets ass cut by Clemson, who probably finish 8-4 or something like that this year.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, I could still win the ACC and make it into the playoff.
Harrison's with me. He said, if the line closes at 12.5, I'll take the road team to cover.
Mm. Yeah, two scores. I'm with you.
Yeah, but all right, for the Mad Dog Phil Mullinax, it's JC Sherbert. This has been Inside the Gamecock Show. Thank you to Deputy Smitty for jumping in with us. We always enjoy our conversations with him. Thanks to Perry Orth for coming in, Patrick Davis, Matt Smith in the first hour. Special is still going on, so I got some clarification. So I think it's Sunday at midnight, the $29.99 for the whole year deal ends.
It's over.
Home three, big spur, the Gamecock Central, unless they extend it again.
That's true.
But hundreds of you have signed up. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Nice comment out there from some folks about the fact that we've put out good content, even on other websites.
That's right. We appreciate that.
Thank you for complimenting us. We try our best. And we're going to continue to do good, continue to be even better with that. We appreciate y'all. We'll holla at you soon.